But the military campaign in Iraq and the rationale for the campaign itself will remain a matter of debate for a long time. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos, Nigeria.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
Driving around in my pickup truck, the only thing you can do is pick her nose and listen to WUSB in Stony Brook. That and go out with the boys and chase sheep on Friday night. Got one!
Surprised? Yes, I am too. Wasn't supposed to be here this week, but apparently we're not doing the Noam Chomsky thing. Obviously, we're not doing the Noam Chomsky thing this week, so I guess we'll just have to wait and see when that's going to be on. But for now, you'll have to tolerate me, and that means another edition of Off the Wall. Yes, this is Off the Wall, with your host Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or so. And it is a sunny day, Tuesday, May 27th, 2003. Sunny, pleasant, a good day to be outdoors. Yeah, well, the reason I'm focusing on that is because we just got out of the Memorial Day weekend. And for those of you in the New York area, you may well be aware that it rained on Friday, on Saturday, it rained on Sunday, and boy, did it ever rain on Monday. And I'm sorry, I'm not gloating or anything like that. I don't mean to gloat. It's not that I like seeing plans dashed and people made miserable and, you know, crying babies and crying adults and things like that, parades canceled and barbecues ruined and oh no, okay, all right, it is kind of fun to see that. Only in this country are you expected to have a happy Memorial Day. You know, it's a holiday about all the people who supposedly died, and yeah, let's have a blast, let's get plastered and have as much fun as we possibly can and watch football on TV. I don't know how, but people do. But no, this was a gloomy Memorial Day, and I think that's sort of more, you know, more the point. You know, a time of reflection, a time where you just kind of, you know, ponder what it all means. Maybe not for 4 days, but, you know, for a little bit of the time anyway. And I think too many people just see it as another 4-day weekend, or 3-day weekend, whatever it is, and don't really think about anything more than that. But regardless, for me, it was kind of a somber weekend anyway, and I preferred it not to be sunny and bright and cheerful, because it was the weekend that me and a bunch of other people said goodbye to a very old friend. A very old friend. And that's what I'd like to focus on this hour, is just what that all meant, because for me, it was probably one of the most major defining points of my entire life, was this particular friend, this particular entity. Not a human being, as you may well have guessed. And no, not a dog either. I'm talking about a house. Yeah, a house. A house can really have an effect on your life. Think about it. It's where you live. It's where every aspect of your life occurs. And it's where other people live too. It's where other people have lived, and hopefully where other people will live someday. But this house was different. I'm talking about something that many people have come to know as the Cedars. We said goodbye to the Cedars this weekend. And for those who don't know, the Cedars was an amazing Victorian, I don't know if you want to say mansion, just a Victorian huge house here on the North Shore of Long Island that many of us have occupied since 1984. And really a long time when you think of it, considering originally we were only supposed to have the house for about 10 months. It just kind of grew from there. Many hundreds, if not more, people were affected by this place. And it's, you know, it's more than just a building. I mean, I don't know if people have actually had deep relationships with buildings and houses and things like that. It can be done if the structure is something that you really feel an affinity for. And I know a lot of people felt that in this particular case. Let's go back to the root of the matter, to where it all began. For me, anyway. The house itself, it began back in 1879 when it was built. How many of you have lived in a house that was built in 1879? You know, that alone is something that I think so few of us can understand. You know, we live in these factory-built things today. I know, because I grew up in one of those factory-built things. And the latest craze these days is the big, huge townhouses for all those homeless millionaires out there. And you kind of, like, let it all pass you by, what the old houses of the 1800s mean. There's a lot of them still on Long Island. There's a lot of them throughout the country. Certainly a lot of them throughout the world, if not much older than that. Back in 1984, fresh out of Stony Brook, I actually had developed a skill. It can happen, believe it or not. You can develop skills in this place that you don't know you have. And in this particular case, thanks to the good people at the Stony Brook Press, which I'm happy to say is still here, I was able to learn how to be a typesetter. Back then, though, typesetting was infinitely different than it is now. And it's probably infinitely different than it was anywhere else at the time, too, because it was the Stony Brook Press, after all. When I first decided to try to play with the machine. Keep in mind, I had spent years hacking with computers and messing around various other keyboards, so I knew my way around the QWERTY keyboard, so I was able to type fairly well, which was more than what 90% of the staff could do at that particular point in time, who at most could type with one, maybe two fingers. I could type with three, maybe four. And that meant that I was the typesetter for the Stony Brook Press for that period of time. And it was, you know, the machine itself was really kind of odd looking. It looked like one of those Selectric typewriters. In fact, I think it was a Selectric typewriter, but it had a memory. And it could print out, you would type in the story, and then what it would do would be print out the whole thing. It would just basically be a typewriter gone mad that would just print out onto the special paper that you make newspapers with. Well, that led me to believe that, hey, I could get a job in the real world as a typesetter, and sure enough, that's what I did. I wound up working over at the Village Times, which was, I believe still is, a local newspaper here in the Three Village area. And special points for anyone who can guess what the Three Villages are in this particular area. I don't know, we have lots of listeners from out of the immediate vicinity, so if anyone wants to research that, go ahead. Go crazy. But in any event, the Village Times was where I worked for a while as another kind of typesetter, using different machines, a little bit more advanced. But what that meant was that I was privy to things that came into the classified department, such as house rentals. And at that particular point in time, having just gotten past legal difficulties that involved various government entities and corporate entities and computer hacker allegations and things like that, And having just gotten 2600 off the ground a few months earlier, me and a bunch of people were looking for a place to live in the area. And so we were kind of perusing the ads, and me being a typesetter that did the classifieds, I sort of got to see things before the vast majority of people who were looking for houses got to see them. And this one particular advertisement that I saw kind of leapt out at me, and I'll try to recollect it as best. I was actually going to go to the library yesterday and go onto microfilm, find that edition of the newspaper, and read the actual words of the advertisement so that you could see how amazing it was. So I'm going to have to rely on memory because the library was closed yesterday because it was a holiday, which I think is a stupid idea because if it's a holiday, that means you can go to the library because you don't have to go to work or school or whatever it is you usually do. It was like the only day of the year I would have gone to the library, and I didn't go because they were closed. Everybody loses. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So the advertisement basically read something like this. Victorian house on the water, 10 acres, 15 rooms, 9 fireplaces, $1,200. Must see. Now, I don't know about you, but those last two words really struck me as kind of funny. After that kind of a description, 15 rooms, 9 fireplaces, 10 acres, a beach. Must see? I don't have to see that. That's the most amazing thing I've ever heard in my life. So the race was on to grab this place before anybody else could, and I had that one-day advantage had to round up a bunch of people. Make a long story short, we were able to get the place, although it was only for 10 months. But somehow, over the years, that turned into more years, many more years, and many more people as people moved in and out. You could fit about 7, maybe 8 people in the house without any problem whatsoever because it was so big. I know today houses are big. You know, they build these new houses, and they're huge. But those are like kind of the gluttonous huge houses. This was, you know, the Victorian era where you just had sturdy structures that were meant for large families, and it was different. It really was different. So anyway, the house itself was just as it was described, you know, this old Victorian house, 3 stories, plus an attic, plus a basement. Lots and lots of grounds. You had your woods, your fields, your beaches, your water, all kinds of things. Plus, all these old hidden things that you would find. You know, things like hidden compartments in rooms, little passageways, strange windows that didn't seem to go anyplace, little handles on the wall, I guess, for calling maids of a bygone era. Just all kinds of things that were relics from the past. And what a past this place had. I mean, you know, we're talking about a house that lived through, you know, 2 world wars, the Great Depression, the 1800s, you know, Lincoln was alive when this thing was built. And actually, I'm not sure, was he alive? I don't know what, you know, this is my Americanism coming out. I don't know the history. What year did Lincoln get? Well, never mind. But the point is, you know, it was in that era, 1879. That was a long time ago. Now, the house was occupied by an historian. Well, not at the time we moved in, obviously. It was occupied by somebody who was an historian for the whole era, knew about the Revolutionary War and how that affected the Setauket spy ring and all this kind of thing that was going on. And she did all the history reports from that particular house. In fact, it was even said that that particular house, with its view of the water, would actually be able to send signals via a clothesline to soldiers on boats and things like that. And it played a very important part in history. Everybody knew where this place was. Everybody had heard of it. Repairmen would come around to fix the furnace and would simply wander around in awe and look at all the parts of the building and the parts of the ground, and they would just want to stay forever. You know, they would wind up fixing things for a lot longer than they should have because they just wanted to be in the company of this amazing house. And so many people felt that way. So many people got it. so many people appreciated what it was that the Cedars had to offer that so few other places ever do have to offer. Now, for those of us who live on Long Island, for those of us who live in present-day America, it's not very likely we're going to have this kind of opportunity. I remember back in the early days, just talking to people about this place that we somehow managed to stumble into, asking how many people in their entire lives do you think will ever be able to experience something like this? Will ever be able to get to a place where you don't have to worry about your next door neighbor because they're not very close. You can't even see them. You don't have to worry about somebody watching what you do, you know, watching what time you come in at night, what time you leave, except, of course, for the people inside the house, where you can actually hear silence at night or whatever animal happens to be around at that particular time of year, where you can actually see the stars, where there's no light pollution, where you can actually get away from the noise and the commotion and just the sound, the sounds of suburbia, the sounds of urban life, just that droning noise that's always around us. How many people get that opportunity? How many people are actually able to live in a place like that? Not just for a vacation, but actually, you know, being able to sit on a porch and think. You know, to be able to write something, to be able to compose something. So many people have come in and out of this this particular house and created something because of it, because you could actually pause and hear yourself think without all the distractions. Well, we couldn't even get cable TV, you know, because it was so far off the main road that they wouldn't touch the place. Not for under a few thousand dollars anyway. So there was all this communing with nature. Not to the point that it would drive you crazy, you know. There's a little bit too much communing with nature that goes on sometimes where people just sort of retreat into a shack in the middle of the woods and that's the end of them. This was the best of both worlds because it was fairly nearby. Fairly near all of suburbia. All the modern conveniences were within walking distance, really. But you could actually get away from that. You could actually retreat and just calm down a bit and think. I can honestly say that a lot of what I wound up doing since that period in time, mostly putting out the magazine and those various other projects I've been involved in, I could not have done that living in places that I had lived before, you know, places in mainstream suburbia, just because, you know, there's just too many distractions around you all the time. There's all kinds of noise, all kinds of people, all kinds of commotion, all kinds of annoyances. And it's sad to think so few people can really get back to that. It makes things so much more difficult when you don't have that advantage. And of course, things happen when you have a place like that. Things happen in ways that you just couldn't imagine in a normal type of environment. The tiniest things just wind up meaning more. And of course, that's where many of you know Walter. Walter the dog, yes. Walter was born there. And Walter is buried there now, in fact. For many of you over the years who have followed the 2600 saga, Walter was a half Chesapeake Bay, half Yellow Lab retriever that was conceived in the driveway, actually, of the Cedars. His mother had lived there the year before. Can't believe I'm telling this story on the radio, but his mother had lived there the year before, and every so often she would get into heat, and all the dogs of the neighborhood would basically camp out outside the house, all different kinds. You had basset hounds, German shepherds, even a poodle. And back then, you know, the most important thing was keep the dog in the house, you know, make sure the dog doesn't get out so that God knows what would happen. And then we'd have, you know, a whole swarm of bizarre-looking animals to deal with inside the house. Unfortunately, fortunately, actually, that didn't happen. The dog did get out once. and found a next-door neighbor, a Chesapeake Bay Retriever, and had her moment with that particular animal. And gave birth on the front porch a few months later to Walter. And the interesting thing about Walter was he was a litter of one. Yeah, a litter of... Can you imagine that? A dog with no siblings at all. We were waiting for an hour for the second puppy to come out and never did. And it was just so bizarre having something like that happen. And Walter sort of personified the house. To this day, I believe there's a picture of him hanging up inside... inside the place, which I guess has to be taken down now. This was someone who wound up knowing everybody who ever lived there, would be able to identify cars by who was driving them. One of the most amazing things, you know, Walter would not bark at me if I was driving my car down the road, but if I happened to drive someone else's car down the road, that would trigger something, and he'd start barking because I was driving someone else's car. He knew the car, he knew the person, but he didn't know that person driving that car. It was a really kind of amazing thing. And, of course, you had all kinds of other animal things going on. We had a beehive at one point that nested in the fireplace, in one of the 9 fireplaces. In fact, happened to be in my room. Happened to be the fireplace that was in my room. The queen bee chose that as the new location. It's the only time in my entire life I've ever been stung by a bee was in my own room. And, you know, I knew something was wrong when I woke up and I just heard this this droning noise, you know, like a chainsaw going on outside, except it wasn't stopping. And then looking around and realizing, hey, there's a bee inside the room. And look, there's another bee. And, oh my God, look at the floor. It's covered with bees, just like a horror movie. But not being afraid somehow, because it's all a part of nature, and it's all something that, you know, happens. And, of course, we had to smoke them out with a fire to get everybody out of there, and eventually they agreed to leave. And there are other such infestations, such as mysterious black flies that would suddenly appear for only 1 week of the year, in a particular window. We had the paper wasp that would just suddenly come out of the walls, it would seem. And yes, an occasional rat. Now, I know that sounds disgusting, but you have to understand, in the country, a rat is not the same thing as in the city. In the country, a rat is a natural animal that roams in the fields and occasionally finds a house and says, hey, this is a better place for me to hang out, so I'm going to be here for a little while. And so occasionally, yeah, you'd see a rat, you know, running by, and you'd have to set a trap or something just to get him out of there. One particular time, we managed to corner the rat, get him into the library. Yeah, a house actually has a library, you know. How many houses have libraries today? We managed to corner the rat, get him into the library, where there was poison waiting for him. Yeah, I know, I hated to do it. I hated to poison the rat, but, you know, having rats as your housemates just doesn't work for me. And you can toss them outside, they just come back in, you know, so you have to sometimes resort to drastic measures, and this was one of them. And this rat was too smart for normal rat traps. He knew how they worked. So anyway, we managed to somehow get him to go into the library where there was poison there, and we were able to close off the doors leading to that particular room. But I remember at the time we were showing the house to prospective housemates. That was always an ongoing thing at the Cedars. You'd always have new people moving in, old people moving out. You know, when you have 8 people living in a single house, that's always what happens. Nobody really wanted to move out. But, you know, sometimes life beckons. Sometimes you get married. Sometimes you move to Europe. Sometimes, you know, you run out of money. Sometimes, you know, you graduate and have another school waiting for you in a different part of the country. It happens. People move on. And so new people were looking at the place, you know, thinking that maybe they wanted to move in. And of course, most people who looked at the place wanted to move in. In this particular occasion, though, it was a bit bizarre because we had this big sign on one of the doors saying, "Do not open door, rat is inside." Now imagine seeing a sign like that in a house that you wanted to move into and still wanting to move into it. That's the kind of house this was. Hurricane Gloria. I don't know what year that was. Sometime in the 80s. Hit this area really, really hard. Bullseye in the Three Village area. And I remember standing on the porch of the Cedars watching it all take place, watching the trees snap and fall, watching leaves flying up into the sky. Just watching carnage and destruction, hearing this amazing noise, the noise of wind, the noise of trees bending as much as they possibly can, the incredible noise of just leaves. Leaves are really loud. You know, a lot of us don't realize that living in suburbia, how big a noise trees can make. You know, not just when they're falling, but just when they're moving in the wind. Those are some of the good noises. Those are the noises that help you think. The noise of crickets and katydids and birds and raccoons and pheasants. Yes, that's right. We had pheasants there, too. Never saw a pheasant before moving in there. But just standing there on the porch, seeing this incredible display of nature and watching everything being destroyed in its wake, except for the house, of course. The house stood. In fact, if you went inside the house during this hurricane, you barely heard a thing. Back in 1879, they built houses to last, and they built them really, really strong. No pun intended. Yeah, okay, I guess I should point out at this point that the house was in a part of the neighborhood called Strong's Neck because it was part of the old Strong family here in the Three Village area. There are certain families that kind of have roots that go back into the dawn of Christ, I guess, or I don't know. They seem to have been here forever. They have parts of the community named after them. They have houses named after them. And in fact, this was the Kate Strong house that we lived in, otherwise known as the Cedars. But we endured hurricanes, blizzards, you name it, any kind of weather extreme. But the house stood, the house remained, the house was there to weather it all. But when you live in a house that is built in the 1800s, you have to remember a couple of things. And this is why so few people, I think, can truly appreciate this in the present day and era. In a house that was built so long ago, there are certain modern conveniences that you just have to live without. And since we were so far away from the main street, cable TV was one of them. And heat was really another. I'm not saying the house was not heated. I'm saying the house wasn't heated as aggressively as houses today are. There were no heat vents in most of the rooms. A couple of rooms had them. The hallways had them. But for the most part, the house was meant to be heated through the fireplaces. And to redesign it, to have heat ducts going into all the rooms, that's something that just was never done. Maybe won't be done. I don't know. And yeah, it was a bit chilly. It wasn't freezing because you had this thick insulation in the walls. But it definitely was colder than your average suburban house. And a lot of people would, scoff at living in a place where the temperature was, say, in the 60s in the winter. I have no trouble living in a house where the temperature is in the 60s. But most people today, the house isn't in the 70s, it's... I'm sorry, I just can't deal with that, It has to be climate-controlled exactly the way that, that you demand it, with hundreds of TV channels at your beck and call and every modern convenience known to man. This was different. This was one of the sacrifices you had to make to be able to live in a place like this and be a part of it. Most people got it. Most people who live there certainly got it. A lot of people didn't. A lot of people passing through, that would visit. A lot of people, keep in mind, the house had always been for sale throughout this entire period of 18 years and 8 months. 18 years and 8 months for a house we were only supposed to have for 10 months. Had a lot of realtors go through there, had a lot of prospectors looking at the place, and they never could appreciate it. All they could see were condominiums. All they could see was the bottom line, how much money they could make. You know, out with the old, in with the new. This house was huge. 15 rooms, you know, all kinds of areas that most houses don't have today, like, a, you know, a library, a study, a den, a game room, things like that. And yeah, the houses today are big. Even bigger than this particular house, but just not the same. Not the same at all. Especially when they're next to each other, you know. They're all the same and they look the same. There's no real difference. And this one was certainly unique. But the other really amazing thing about this, and this is something I recommend to people, especially people who are, you know, in the college part of their lives. But you can do this at any point in your lives, actually. That's the group home experience. Now, a group home, obviously, is where you live with a group of people. Usually, you know, the college group homes aren't that big. Maybe, you know, 3-4 people share a house. But here we had 6, 7, 8 people, sometimes more. You know, depending on what was going on at a particular point in time. There was always room. There was always more room. If you had people coming over to stay, there was always a room to put them. There was always, you know, some other part of the house. And in fact, you know, living in a group setting, you wind up having all these experiences you never would have otherwise. Just the whole, you know, sharing communal type of situation, which I know freaks a lot of people out. They hear the word communal and they think, oh my God, you know, hippie commune, communist, you know, all kinds of things like that. But basically it was always a bunch of people just living in the same place, doing their own thing. And the beauty of this place was that if you wanted to retire into your room, you wanted to be in another part of the house, if you really started to not be able to stand somebody, you were able to stay in that part of the house and not see that person. Not deal with other people, if that's what you wanted. And then if you changed your mind, you could mill around, see other people, do other things. It was that big. Well, you could do that. But, you know, living in a group home, you have to, of course, learn all kinds of things about sharing, about, you know, paying bills, about being responsible. And, you know, conflict resolution. I mean, I have to say, living in an environment like that, I think I'm prepared to be in the UN now. You know, where all kinds of disputes arise over the most petty of issues. You know, someone taking some of your peanut butter, that could be a big deal. Or someone making a phone call and not claiming it. Or someone parking their car in the wrong place, or not doing their share of the cleaning. I mean, you know, you name it. The most petty interests of all are represented in group homes, but also you have the sense of togetherness, the sense of facing everything as one, as this group of people that was just kind of brought together by fate. And you have this this unique area to live in, and that's kind of a bonus. Having a place like that, of course, we were able to do all kinds of things that most people couldn't do, such as have really cool parties. When you have 10 acres, when you have a beach, when you have a 15-room house, you can do things that a lot of people can't do. You can make all kinds of noise that you know, most people wouldn't be able to do. Halloween was one time in particular. This house was meant for Halloween. I mean, a Victorian mansion, basically, from the 1800s. A driveway half a mile long, where people had to walk down to get to the house in the middle of the night and hear all kinds of crazy sound effects and see all kinds of things hanging from the trees. And then when they got to the house, being forced to walk through the basement of horrors, where things had been set up to jump out at them and scare them. And then when they finally were able to get into the house, just being able to mill around with literally hundreds of people that would show up. Hundreds of people from all around the world, literally. People came from other parts of the world to be part of this. The Halloween parties at the Cedars, I mean, that's like, that's the stuff legends are made of. It got so big that at one time I remember being invited to it by somebody. I mean, I lived in the house and I was invited to a party in my own house by somebody who didn't know I lived in that house. That's how big it was. Everybody showed up. In fact, I wonder what's going to happen next Halloween. People just might show up by habit. Anyway, so that's what we did this weekend. We said goodbye to the house because it's in the process of being sold. And everybody was given their walking papers and told that this is it. This really is it. And we had a few false alarms over the years where it looked like somebody was going to buy the place and maybe tear it down or build something else or just have a rich family move in instead of a bunch of, misfits from the community. But this was real. This was the time when everybody really had to get out and been spending the last several weeks. It takes a long time to clear the place out. I must have had 1,000 books in this house. 1,000 books. And the books themselves, they dated back into the 1800s themselves. And just opening up the books and seeing writings from people no longer around, people who owned the books, relatives that would dedicate books, sometimes to me, notes from people who you haven't talked to in a very long time. It was a really reflective period going through all that and packing it all away and finally moving on. Well, just as one last particular note on the subject, if anyone out there has several million dollars and wants to buy the place and keep it from turning into condominiums, please email us, otw@2600.com. We raised a collection at the party that we had this past weekend, and, we didn't quite get that high. But it's something. I'd like to know, people out there, if anyone is still out there, have you ever had a place like that that meant something to you so much, that became a part of you? It's kind of hard to just, cut away and change. But, you have to. You have to move on. Life is about moving on. Life is about change. But this was something that, was inevitable. I don't know. It's just It's just a major point. We would not have 2600 if it were not for this place. I mean, I say that because I know I wouldn't have been able to, to be able to concentrate, to be able to get the space I needed, in order to put something like that together. You take these things for granted, and you get spoiled. You can never go back to where you came from. Back into those suburban, boxes that pass for houses these days. You can't just, go back to that when you've experienced something like this. And it's good to know there are people who get it. There are people who appreciate this. However few there are people who realize such things are rare. Such things don't come often. And so this Memorial Day weekend, we said goodbye to the Cedars. It's still there, and hopefully it will remain there for hundreds more years. Just won't have people like us in it. At least let's hope it stays there. Let's hope it doesn't turn into something horrible. All right, 632-WUSB is our phone number. Area code 631-632-WUSB. Glad I got that out of my system. It was something that needed to be said. Something that meant a lot over the years. And now it's time to look to the future and see how things have changed you and move on. I'm not speaking for myself. I know I'm speaking for literally hundreds of people who have, you know, passed through there in one way or another and been changed. And there are other places like that as well. I mean, if this radio station was a building, it would be like that building because of all the different exchanges of thoughts and ideas that have taken place. You run across these things occasionally, you know. Places where you least expect them. You get put in periods of life where, you know, it just makes a difference, and you don't know how you got there, you just know that you were in the right place at the right time. Okay. That's my epilogue to the Cedars. Shall we get back to the real world? I guess so. After this this nearly 20-year break of reality, now it's time to move back to the stark situations of everyday life. Okay, well, wait. Before we go back to everyday life, I'd like to take a look at something else that's kind of out of this world, literally. How many of you saw the picture? The picture of Earth. The picture of Earth from Mars. It was released last week. NASA released on Thursday what it billed as the first portrait of Earth as seen from Mars. It's a colorized photograph? They couldn't take a color picture? They had to colorize it? Maybe they mean it was a color picture. I hope they mean it was a color picture. I mean, it'd be kind of stupid to go all the way out to Mars and not bring color film. It shows Earth from 86 million miles away as a small blue dot orbited by its even smaller moon. Yes, that's right. Amazing. All right, we have a phone call. Let's take this. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, man.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, it's Winston from California.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. I hear you always talking that nobody ever calls in, so I figured I'd finally try and call in, so...
Yeah, you know, I don't understand why people don't call in. I know that a lot of people are listening. We look at the statistics after the show, and we always get a large number of people listening, but I think people are shy, you know?
I think, at least as far as out here, it's, like, comes on at 3 p.m, and, you know, most people are at work, so...
Yeah, that is a disadvantage. You know, no matter what time it is here, it's going to be disadvantageous to somebody somewhere. So, what's on your mind?
Well, I had a couple of things. Like, you were always talking about people should go exploring buildings.
Yes.
Stuff like that. A good website for them to check out would be infiltration.org.
Infiltration.org.
Yeah, they put out a magazine, too. I know in the back of 2600, in the marketplace, there's a little advertisement for it. But if you go to their website, they have, like, lots of great links for pretty much anywhere in the country. People write in and put what they find in, like, different techniques and how to be careful and not kill yourself doing it. So
that's a great idea. A whole website devoted to infiltration of buildings and things like that.
Yeah, real-world hacking.
Yeah, I mean, that's what hacking is all about, is exploring, you know, wandering around places you're not supposed to be.
It's pretty good. They go through, like, you know, give ethics about it and stuff and, you know, tell you what to look for and everything like that. And I had another thing I was asking. I was going to see if you heard about this because it sounded kind of weird to me. Jay Walker, are you familiar with him?
It rings a bell. Refresh my memory.
He's the one who started Priceline.com.
Oh yeah, no, I read that in the paper today. Yeah, tell us about it.
He has a new startup going. It's called ushomeguard.org. The website's not up, but if you go to it's walkerdigital.com. It'll explain it on there, and also on CNN's website they have it. What he wants to do is, in places like power plants, airports, and quote-unquote other critical infrastructures, he wants to put webcams, and we'll have the government pay people $10 an hour to basically sit and watch for alleged terrorists.
So everybody here can become a security guard?
Yeah, basically. And they go through and explain it, like you have to pass a test by looking at a series of photos, and then you click yes if it looks like a terrorist, and no if it doesn't, and it's kind of crazy. It's like, it sounds like something you'd read in, like, you know, 1984 Big Brother, where, and it falls like kind of long, I think, what was it, Tips?
Uh-huh. Yeah, where everybody is watching everybody else.
Yeah, and it falls in kind of like that, and people basically, he wants to have the government agencies pay people $10 an hour to sit and watch for terrorists, so.
I mean, how can you be watching, I guess, you know, watching a power plant or something on your computer, riveted to the screen, and you see somebody walk by? I understand you can also talk to them and say, what are you doing there, or something like that. It just seems like this is, like, you know, going to be abused no end, you know, it's going to turn into a farce.
Yeah, and it was, it was something weird on there where it's like, if you spotted somebody like that you thought was a terrorist or performing a terrorist activity, you click on a link and that starts the first stage of notification and alert to go through and let, you know, whatever law enforcement agency that would handle it. So it's kind of sketchy.
Yeah, to say the least. I mean, this Jay Walker guy, I know he's just doing it to make a buck because, you know, he started Priceline, which is a good idea, and he figures he can sell this idea to various different people and make a ton of money. But when you go beyond that and look at what is actually going to happen as a result, you're going to have it's going to be like the Stasi, you know, it's going to be like East Germany or Romania where everybody's watching everybody else. Nobody knows who the cops are and who are the secret police. And, you know, walking down the street, if you walk the wrong way, you might be turned in. If you find yourself, you know, in a hallway that you're not supposed to be in, you could find yourself surrounded by a SWAT team. You know, it's not a healthy environment. When I explored buildings and wandered around places I wasn't supposed to be, you know, I never had that kind of fear. The worst fear I had was, okay, I'd be kicked off or I'd be told not to do that again. But it's a lot different.
And yells at you for a little bit, and you say, "Okay, and leave."
Yeah, I mean, you know, how many people have grown up and had that happen to them?
Another thing that I was thinking about that would probably even cause more of a problem. Like, I think there's enough problem out there with police and law enforcement agencies. I mean, if you just look at the hacking-related events, you know, where they just don't recognize something that's pretty innocent or trivial or not threatening, and they don't understand it, so they freak out. If you just have, you know, moms and pops or anybody else, you know, middle America just sitting there with no kind of training or anything, the only training that it was listing on there was they're going to look at a series of photos and be like, yeah, this guy's a terrorist. No, it's not. And if you get them, like, you know, enough of them right, they hire you.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, you know, I'll tell you right now, you know, if something like this were to be put in place, I would feel it's my obligation to go to every nuclear power plant I could and walk around by the gates wearing a turban. All right, and just like freaking these people out as much as I possibly can without breaking any laws, just to, like, you know, let them know that this is a completely ineffectual way of tracking down any kind of so-called terrorist activity. You know, it's just going to make us all more suspicious and more looking over our shoulders and less prone to any kind of deviance whatsoever. You must, you know, obey these strict rules and be like everybody else or you're a threat. It's really silly and very dangerous, I think.
Yeah, and then also, I think it might have been last week's show, I think it was a guy in Canada said that the 2600 website was blocked when he would try and go to it. Mm-hmm. And, like, I know it's been put in the magazine and stuff. If you just go Google it, click on the cached page, and it'll bring it right up. I know at one of the libraries out here, live just north of Modesto, so anybody who's been watching the news should probably heard about Modesto and what's going on there. But
what's going on in Modesto?
With Lacey Peterson.
Oh, Lord, yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, we've heard about it.
Yeah, so it's been on Fox News and CNN and everything like that. But I know one of the libraries here, it's you know, they have it blocked, but I just go clicked on the Google Cache page when I pop in there and bring it up and put it on all the computers and then. You know, kept leaving, but...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't understand why they blocked the page. I really don't, because there's nothing on there that's going to offend them, you know. I mean, maybe freedom of speech would offend them, I'm sorry, but, you know, there is no illegal information. There's no, like, you know, here's how to hack the White House type of thing. It's you know, that's not what it's about.
And it'd be kind of funny because they'll block 2600, but then securityfocus.com, you can go right to it, and, you know, that's... You know, you can go and pull off all types of little, like, scripts and stuff that, you know, people go and do denial of service because they'll just have that code posted on there, and you can just go and get it right off, and that's wide open. And
yeah, and you know they have the right type of name, security focus. They sound corporate. They sound, you know, mainstream. So they let things like that go through. But when you say, yes, we're hackers, this is what we believe in, oh, you're dangerous because, you know, that kind of thinking is just wrong.
Yes. So I just wanted to go ahead and let you guys know that and keep up the good work on the show. I really enjoy it.
Thanks. Thanks for all the info. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Call from Modesto, California. Let's take another call, 631-632-WUSB. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay. I was just wondering about the Cedars. You were talking about you were hoping that nothing would happen to it, and I was wondering why if it doesn't have landmark status.
Well, that's a very good question. I don't know enough about this, and I would like to pursue that. I'd like to know, you know, if it does. It has one of those little historic-type markers put up by, I think, the local civic association,
right,
saying this house was built in 1879, occupied by Kate Strong, et cetera, et cetera.
From what you described it and what went on there, it must be. I can't imagine. I mean, there's a house. I'm from Huntington, and mm-hmm. there is a house there that the part of the Gardner family of Gardner Island and all
yes.
that, and they were another one of those Long Island founding families.
Yes.
And they have landmark status for their house, and it's like and everything's built up around it, and they're protected. And, I mean, I don't know. I suppose it's easy enough to find out, but I think that it deserves it.
Now, when you say it's protected, that means that
It can't be torn down. It can't be changed. It has to even when the owners do things to it, they have to stay within certain guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that.
I mean, I hope the house has that. I not, you know, even though I'm not living there anymore, I you know, I will do whatever I can to make sure that it gets that if it doesn't have it already, and that the house is preserved. Whoever winds up living there, you know, you just feel. I don't know if you ever had this experience, but you just feel kind of this connection with the house.
Yeah. I actually have been there. Yeah.
You've been to the Cedars?
Huh?
Oh, great. Well, then you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's been there so long. It's it just has this this air about it. And, you know, I don't think I've ever had a bad night's sleep in the place. Always just this this serenity and peacefulness that surrounds it. And I just want to make sure that's preserved, that stays there. That's not, you know, torn down by some idiot that feels he can make money from the land and,
I know,
waterfront property and all that kind of nonsense.
Putting out the word to the rich people listening, maybe there can be some sort of pooling of money.
Well, there are a lot of rich people out there who do get it, who understand what that means, and, you know, who would really be upset if something happened to the house. But then again, there are a lot of rich people that don't get it that would, you know, like nothing better.
More developers want to just look at it and see the real estate value.
Yeah, that's all they see. They see money, and it's just so much more than that. You know, I think not living in a place like that, maybe I wouldn't, you know, think the same way. I wouldn't realize certain things that I realize today just by not having the opportunity to reflect on it. And I just, you know, I really wish everybody had the opportunity to go through what we all went through at a place like that, you know, where you could see the night, you know, the darkness, you could hear the sound of nature. So many people go through their entire lives, they have no idea what I'm talking about.
I'll do a little research. If I find anything on, I'll send
please,
it.
Please do. Do you have my email address?
Yeah, I know it.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Bye.
631-632-WUSB, and good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Omni from Mason City, Iowa.
From where?
Oh, in Mason City, Iowa.
Iowa, great.
Yeah, I was calling 2600 Meet, not this Friday, but next Friday.
Yes, the first Friday of the month.
Yes, are you going to be there?
At which one?
The New York, the City Court building?
I plan on being at the New York City one, yes.
Okay, because the company I work for is flying me out, and I plan on driving up there for that one.
Oh, great. Well, yeah, no, definitely drop by.
Okay, I'll do that.
You guys from Iowa were very big supporters for the pledge drive last week at WBAI.
Yeah, I was listening to that. I remember that. There's a couple people from Ames. There's a 2600 meet that just started up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not listed yet, I guess. They're working on that, but it's a Santa Fe Espresso Coffee House,
uh-huh,
College Town down in Ames.
Uh-huh. Great. Well, okay, look forward to seeing you again. The 2600 meetings, they take place the first Friday of every month. Usually in major cities and malls or food courts, things like that. And you can get a full listing, www.2600.com/meetings. So, yeah, look forward to seeing you in New York.
Thank you much.
Take care. Good evening. You're on the air.
The first caller was talking about how some pages are blocked and how on Google, if you go and click the cast,
mm-hmm.
that it would bring it up. Well, at my school, it actually doesn't work that way. It still denies access to it for some reason.
Well, some blockers are a bit more sophisticated than others, and they know about that trick. Like, you know, one trick would involve a translation service of Google, where you basically would translate a page into Korean, and since, you know, it doesn't, none of the characters will be the same, you wind up getting the text back in English, but you bypass the block. There are various different tricks. Some are as primitive as simply using the IP number. Sometimes that works instead of the domain name.
Yeah.
What part of the country are you in?
Virginia.
Virginia, yeah. I mean, you know, people use different blockers for different reasons. Sometimes it's very hard to find a way around them. Sometimes it's very easy. Sometimes it's something you wouldn't expect, you know.
Uh-huh.
Just keep trying, you know.
Yeah.
All right, let us know what you find.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
631-632-WUSB is our phone number. It's good to hear people that get it, whether it's exploring something, knowing what it's about to wander around places and see things. You know, when people would walk by our house, having a 10-acre house on the water, a lot of people would, you know, drive down the driveway thinking it was a road and or walk down the beach or whatever. You know, you don't get all possessive and say, you can't be here because this is mine. I mean, a lot of people do. I know. It's sad. But to see that people are curious, they want to know what this is, or they're in awe of it, you know, they appreciate it. We just could not take that away from people. And anyone who came down that road was welcomed. Unless they were hostile, of course, which they weren't. For the most part, we had horses coming down the road sometimes. We had bicycles and cars and, you know, all kinds of boats going by. And it was great. It was great. So many people just really understood. And like that caller who called in, so many people have been to the house. So many people have seen it. So many people know. We had WUSB parties there a lot. We had, all kinds of holiday celebrations and people from all over. I'm not just talking about a small group of people that, got something from this place. So many people benefited in some way. And if you're a reader of the magazine, you benefited in a rather indirect way. Simply because, well, it is kind of direct. I don't think you'd have a magazine to read if it wasn't for the peace of mind that those of us who were putting out the magazine at that point in time got from it. It was really something. The first few days of the magazine basically took place in that house. And it was really different than it was today, really different. We used to come out on paper, used to be able to fit all the back issues in a single room, used to be able to survive on, pre-386-type computers with floppy drives instead of hard drives. Things have changed so much. The telephone system, just all the differences that have occurred. And when you think that that's only since 1984, you know, and that house has been there since more than 100 years before then. All the changes that have taken place, all the things that have happened, and it's stood there. It's been there throughout. My only hope is that it will stay there for a much, much longer time, and that everybody who got something out of it will do everything they can to make sure that that is a reality. Looks like we're out of time. Sorry. I know we spent a lot of time on this subject, but it certainly was something that meant a lot to me. Again, our email address, otw@2600.com. We'll see you again next week. Good night.
I'm east on a plane, drinking all that free champagne. I guess I saw this coming down the line. And I know it should be fun, but I think I should have packed my gun. Got that old suburban showdown in my mind. Sit around with the folks, tell the same old tired jokes, bored to death on Sunday afternoon. Mom and Dad, me and you, and the outdoor barbecue. think I'm gonna hide out in my room. I've been gone for a while, made some changes in my style, and they say you can't go home anymore. Well, the streets all look the same, and I'll have to play the game. We'll all sit around in the kitchen chairs with the TV on, with the neighbors there. Out in the yard where my dad works so hard, he never lets the crabgrass grow too high. Place hasn't changed, and it's why I'm gonna feel so strange. But I have to face the music by and by. Drive into town when this big bird touches down. I'm only coming home to say goodbye. Then I'm gone with the wind, and I won't be seen again till that great suburban showdown in the sky. Till that great suburban showdown.